Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall.
Welcome back. Today we're going to talk about a model, an idea that we have, you know, kind of putting some things together to address some of the issues that we've been talking about related to school violence and school safety in general and those kinds of issues.
Yeah, we've been discussing that for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
It's been in the news for the last couple of weeks. And people, the challenge always is, okay, so what should we do about it?
Right.
You know, whether it's a learning problem or a behavior problem or, in this case, a violence problem, what should we do about it?
Right.
So part of our time has been spent, okay, what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
Because the unanswered question is, how do we identify who might be a shooter?
Right.
You know, what is it about these shooters? Are there any common features besides being white and young?
Right.
Or white, male, and young?
Right.
Are there any other common features that we could use to predict who might be at highest risk
right.
for doing something like this?
Right.
And we really don't know right. how to do that yet. We
right.
don't have the technology or the protocols to do that.
Right. And we've talked about, you know, over the last couple of weeks, we talked about some of the limitations we have with predicting.
That's right.
Because we can't, you know, all the things that we try to use to predict,
right.
you know, mental illness. Well, we right. talked about that in detail, that mental illness is not mm-hmm. a reliable predictor.
Right.
There are far more people with mental illness that don't mm-hmm. become violent than there are those
right.
who become violent. We talked about, you know, environmental stressors and
right.
issues that could be related to it. We talked about educational mm-hmm. issues that could be. And again, the problem just comes down to
right.
you know, the incidence of school mass shootings, school
That's
violence
right.
of that sort,
mm-hmm.
is such a low incident, has such a low rate of incidence
right.
that you know, you can't predict those kinds
it's
of
very,
things.
The lower the incidence
of anything,
the harder it is to predict.
Right.
Okay. Shortly after the shooting, I was doing a talk
right.
at a school. And I said, it was parents and teachers. And I said, if I could give you a way that you could identify with 99% accuracy,
mm-hmm.
that you
right.
could predict with 99% accuracy, would you like that? And they said, absolutely. I said, well, your school has about 1,000 students. That means that who are the 100?
Mm-hmm.
Because even with a 1%,
right.
now you have 100 kids out of this whole group. What would you do with those 100?
Right.
You can't screen them all.
Right.
And you might even miss, the shooter might not be in the 100.
Right.
You know, but you even if you have a 99% accuracy rate, you're still looking at over 100 kids.
Right.
Who are potential. And there aren't that many potential shooters in,
right.
in a school.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So you're misidentifying a large number of people.
Right. Right. Well, so today we're going to talk about an approach
mm-hmm.
that we think would
right.
be effective, or you know, if we, you know, put it together in
mm-hmm.
such a way that it could be used in schools, and throughout the school systems to
right.
to help address some of these issues.
Right.
You know, right now, the president and the
governor
mm-hmm. Here in Florida have proposed and or signed,
mm-hmm.
They've signed them. You know, bills to arm teachers,
right? In the state of Florida, that was one of the solutions now for school shootings
mm-hmm.
is we're going to arm teachers,
right?
Or school staff. It may not be
right.
teachers, but it'll be people
right.
in the school building.
And you know, as we talked about, you know, before when we talked about this, we're not sure that this is a solution. Don't know. Because you can't really,
we're not going
you can't
to
really
know.
Test it.
No,
you know,
mm-hmm.
if you know, if you arm a school staff in all of the schools here in Polk County,
right.
for example, and for the next 5 years there are no school shootings,
mm-hmm.
does that mean that it was effective?
Because yeah. we haven't had any in the last 5 years.
Right. So you can't really
determine. You know, you're never going to know whether it's the guns or something else.
Right.
Okay. So it's never something that you're going to be able to test and say, yes, this is right. what's doing it. So it has an intuitive appeal.
Right.
We might feel some comfort knowing that there are other guns in a school.
Right.
Some people are going to be comforted by that.
Mm-hmm.
Other people are going to feel discomfort
right.
over knowing that there are other guns in a school.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they?
Mm-hmm.
Would anybody possibly have access?
Right.
And then we brought up the other day about the substitute teacher whose gun accidentally went off in the classroom.
Right. Well, no, we didn't mention that here. We wrote about it in our article for the Ledger. But yeah, in California,
right?
Mm-hmm. He was a trained reserve police officer who was teaching a class at a high school
on gun safety
and
things.
Yeah.
But the irony of it.
And he accidentally discharges the gun.
Why the gun had a cartridge in it when
right.
he brought it into the building, I'll never know.
Right.
But this is what gun safety is all about. Is
right.
It, you know, assume the gun is loaded.
Right.
Is loaded.
Yeah. And so, you know, and that just happened, you know, this past Tuesday. It was,
right.
what, Tuesday the 13th
right.
Of March. So yeah.
So while this whole thing about arming teachers has some intuitive appeal,
mm-hmm.
we're never going to know whether it's effective
right.
or not. And sadly, we're not going to know if it works until there is a situation.
Right.
And what worries me about that is that, as you and I have discussed, the teacher's probably going to have a handgun of some type.
Right.
And the teacher's going to be confronting somebody with an assault rifle.
Possibly a student.
And also, it's probably a student. So
right.
we're asking school staff to shoot a student.
Right.
Or a former student.
Right.
In the case of Cruz, it would have been a former student.
Right.
What if the teacher knows that student?
Right.
Do you shoot? I mean,
It's
I don't know what will happen in that high
right.
high adrenaline,
right.
highly aroused, very risky situation.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how it will turn out.
Right.
But we're asking a teacher to get right in there.
And I think that the other concern is, and something that we haven't really talked about, but something that's come to my mind before, is that, you know, we have situations where, the idea is that these school professionals who are mm-hmm. going to have the guns are going to be unidentified. You know,
right.
That's
we won't
the way,
know who they are.
We won't know who they are. They'll be somewhere on campus, and we don't know
right.
who they will be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of theorized that that will serve as a deterrent for other people to come to this school with guns.
Right.
Well, I think that, again, in theory, that's a great idea, but, you know, I wonder what the statistics are on how much, you know, unmarked police cars decrease speeding
right.
and other crimes around cities and things like that. It doesn't seem like it deters those kinds of behaviors all that often.
Right.
And so when you don't know that there's if that
mm-hmm.
person is there or who that person is or anything, and there's risk both ways. If you know who that person is, then,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
certainly you could, you know, a potential person could target that person or something like that or avoid
right.
that person. But not knowing, I don't know that we lose sight that that's a possibility.
Right. The other thing, one of the other issues is that if I'm a shooter, say,
yeah.
and I know that there are guns in the school, I'm going to bring bigger guns with me.
Right.
I'm going to make sure that I can outgun anybody because they're not going to have machine guns and assault rifles. They're going to have handguns.
Right.
Okay. Because it doesn't make any sense to store them in a
right.
in a location somewhere
right.
because, okay, you have to have it with you. So it's a handgun, probably. And I'm just going to make sure that I have more firepower than they do.
Right.
So now the shooters are going to bring in more firepower
mm-hmm.
to make sure that they can overcome any resistance that
right.
they encounter.
Right.
Okay. So this vocabulary that we use,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We refer to schools as, quote, soft targets.
Right.
Okay. So we have to, quote, harden the
yeah.
targets. So we harden them by bringing more weaponry in. That's all sounds good, but in real life and in a real shooting situation, I'm not sure that it's going to work
right.
out as we picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's concerning. Yeah. And I know I know of a lot of teachers who are mm-hmm. not interested in that.
Absolutely not.
And of course, nobody will be required to do that.
Right.
But, you know, but I think that a final thought that has come to my mind about it is we have all seen online images of and videos mm-hmm. of classroom situations where teachers are being heavily confronted by students. And, you know, this is on lots of different media sites, mm-hmm. and people often harshly judge, and perhaps even rightfully so, judge yeah. those kinds of situations and say, you know, why are those kids in the classrooms mm-hmm. and why are they, you know, in a situation where they can talk to and treat a teacher that
right.
way.
Right.
You know, so what happens in a situation like that right. where a student who perhaps is big, especially in high school.
You mean students who are physically
intimidating.
Okay.
A teacher, and what if that teacher is armed?
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know, what happens in those kinds of situations?
Right. Because in Florida, you have a right to defend yourself.
Right. So that now does that create that kind of
situation? Wow.
So
That's a new one.
There's so many complications to it. And so the proposal that we're going to talk about today kind of pulls us a little bit away from that, just because, again, in my mind, arming teachers is kind of a higher level intervention than we should really start with.
Well, and also, let's say we do all, let's say for a moment, just for the sake of the discussion, that we say, let's arm teachers. Let's all agree that that's a good idea. Okay, first you have the cost.
Right.
Okay, besides all the danger and all the risk and all the questions that we're posing, you have a cost. Okay, so first of all, you have to train these people. Tens of hours, mm-hmm. scores of hours of training.
Right, 120?
Okay, so if you have 120 hours of training,
120.
And you do the math, how much per hour,
right.
I mean, do you, minimum wage or $10 an hour, $20 mm-hmm. an hour, whatever a teacher makes. So you have to pay each teacher. How many teachers are we talking about? We're talking
right.
about several teachers in each building. In our county, we have over 150, I think 150 schools.
Right.
So we're talking about 500 or 600 people
right.
who have to be trained.
Right.
So if you do the math, just in our county, it's going to cost millions of dollars.
Right.
Plus, you have to buy all the weapons and the ammunition.
The weapons, the trainer, the town.
So in a yeah. state like Florida, we're talking about tens of millions of dollars
mm-hmm.
for this single intervention.
Mm-hmm.
So the question that comes up immediately is, okay, let's say we have the money
mm-hmm.
in our state budget to do this intervention,
mm-hmm.
to pay for this intervention.
Right.
Okay. Are there other interventions that we should at least be considering? And
right.
I think the answer to that is yes, because we know that we have 10% of all students
mm-hmm.
Have a serious mental illness.
Right.
Now, we don't make accommodations for that currently.
Right.
We don't make accommodations for that in our public schools.
Right.
If students become more than schools can manage,
mm-hmm.
we suspend and expel.
Right.
Okay, because schools can't deal with all of these problems.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have anything else in place for this percentage of kids who are seriously mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be worthwhile at least considering taking money
mm-hmm.
and come up with systems,
right.
develop systems for these students who are currently being expelled?
Right.
Remember, Cruz was expelled. He was
right.
one of those kids. And you start throwing kids onto a trash mm-hmm. heap, you have to expect some response from
right.
them. When institutions like schools and churches and legal authorities say you're trash, you're disposable,
mm-hmm.
you have to expect
right.
some response. So should we be having a discussion and considering tens of millions of dollars to solve that problem?
Yeah.
That's you know, if you want to deal with the mental illness issue,
yeah.
that would be a start.
Yeah.
So even if you agree that schools should be, mm-hmm. that teachers should be armed, can we have that much money to do the other interventions?
Yeah.
Right?
And now we're getting into a situation where we don't have that much money.
Right. No. I mean, I wish state budgets, but all we hear about is we have to cut taxes
mm-hmm.
and we don't have the money to do these things.
Yeah.
We don't have the money for infrastructure repair. We don't have the money
right.
for, you know.
So the plan that we would propose
right.
has two prongs.
Mm-hmm.
One is prevention, and one is reaction, basically.
Yeah, one is to prevent it from happening in the first place, mm-hmm. and the other is what do we do if a shooting begins.
So the reaction, I think, is more a little more straightforward,
right.
simply because that's what we're doing now.
Right.
We're just relying on reactionary, mm-hmm. except that we're not really training anybody on what to do.
We have a response,
right?
But we're not training anybody how to use it.
Right. There's a program called Run, Hide, Fight.
Right.
There's different iterations of it, but the idea is the first thing you do is you try to run away.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
If you can't run away, then you hide.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't hide, then you fight.
Right.
Okay. There's two concerns with that. One is that we're not training anybody. I don't know that any schools in our district has received any training in that.
I don't know of any.
In our neighboring county, from what we understand,
Hillsborough?
Hillsborough County, there's just been a couple of schools.
I know of one school.
Right.
That has had training.
Right.
And it was an interesting discovery.
Because this is the second part.
Right. That the teacher and the school staff thought the place to run would be down a particular stairway.
Mm-hmm.
And the professionals who were there said, no, that would be the last thing you should do.
Right.
Because you're running right into right. Danger. Okay.
Right.
And so the teachers were really, really relieved that they had had the training because they would have done the wrong thing.
Right. So, and which is the second concern, is that run, hide, fight is not always the sequence that you should follow.
Right.
You know, sometimes if you're on the second floor, it might be better to hide first.
Mm-hmm.
Lock the door, barricade the door, and hide first,
right.
As opposed to running. Because if you're running and you're going, you know, creating an alley
right.
that everybody's walking mm-hmm. through, you know, you're making it more dangerous.
That's right. And one of the things, they interviewed one of these experts, and he said, turn the lights off, lock the door, put things in front of the door, because most shooters mm-hmm. are in a hurry. You know, they know they only have a few minutes.
Right.
That if they encounter a locked door or a dark room, they're probably going to pass that up and go to a room that's lighted and open.
Right. So the bottom line, as we see it, as it relates to the response side, mm-hmm. is we need better training.
Right.
We have schools do fire drills.
That's right.
And all these other drills all the time. Let's train teachers in how to handle these kinds of situations.
Did you ever have a fire drill at the university when you were there?
At the university?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We did.
You did?
We had a lot last year, 2 years ago. We had a fire drill because they keep rehearsing these scenarios and these safety plans, mm-hmm. and now even universities are having fire drills.
No, I don't remember.
And I was a little bit comforted by that because I would not have used that exit.
Mm-hmm.
I would have gone in another direction.
Mm-hmm.
But they did. They were very, very aware of the day, and they started having fire drills at the university.
That's cool.
So if they're doing it there,
yeah,
you know, let's. I think we should be doing it in our schools as well.
Right.
I would like to know if I was a teacher responsible for kids. I would like to have a professional come in and coach me,
mm-hmm.
teach me as much as I can to protect them.
Right, right. So the reaction, I think it has to start with teacher training and school training, so that people know what to do.
That's right.
I've heard people say, you know, well, you know, if you start training people at the school, more often than not, the school shooter is somebody from the school,
right.
So they're going to know the plan.
That's right. They're going to know the look. They know the geography of the
right.
The architecture.
So, and that's, you know, granted. But what you do then, of course, is in the training, you make it to where even if somebody knows the plan, they still can't really do it. Like again, as we were talking about just a second ago, the, you know, run, hide, fight.
Right.
You know, if the plan is to hide, to barricade the doors, to lock the doors. You know, if you make it to where somebody can't get in,
mm-hmm.
you know, even if the person knows that's the plan, they're not going to be able to get in.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
You know, if we made it difficult to get into every classroom, like if there was some movable object that you could put and lock in place, you know, especially if you're on the second floor,
mm-hmm.
you're probably going to be able to keep everybody safe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the prevention arm. And or I'm sorry, that's the response arm.
The response arm.
And the response arm is going to also be influenced by the prevention problem, because I think that this is where we really have to put our focus, I think, is with the prevention. And maybe that sounds like a very obvious statement, but what are we doing to prevent now?
Right.
We're not doing anything. I mean, we're saying that arming teachers is a preventative measure. I'm not confident that that's the case.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, we have school resource officers at schools as a purported prevention measure. But there was an armed officer at the school in Parkland.
That's right.
And that didn't deter.
Didn't deter and didn't
him at all.
Didn't do anything.
Right. So, I admit that I don't know all of the details related to that officer, but they
keep showing footage of what that officer was doing or where he was, and I just don't know.
Regardless, having an armed officer at the school didn't stop Nicholas Cruz from going to the school with guns.
And you hear people say all the time, well, if shooters knew that there were guns in the building, they wouldn't. Okay, but then you have the other issue of there are shootings at military bases where there are guns all over the place.
Yeah.
Or Fort Hood.
Right.
Okay, and the Washington, D.C. Naval Yard.
Yeah.
There were people all over the place with guns.
Mm-hmm.
Shootings still occur.
Right. So we have to focus on prevention.
Right.
Now, with the prevention, I think there are three levels with prevention.
Right.
And that I think that we forget about. Because there are three levels that we can start to address this issue. The first level is the classroom itself.
That's right.
I would consider that like the micro level.
Right.
We have to start doing a better job of helping teachers appreciate what is and is not risky behavior.
Right.
You know, are there ways to observe, assess, sort of subtly assess a student to determine if they're at risk for violent behaviors or not? And there are.
One of the things that teachers become very, very good at is identifying what's typical and what's atypical. Once you've seen hundreds of children, regardless of what grade you teach, you develop this sense of there's something different about this child.
Right.
Teachers know.
Right.
They already possess the knowledge.
Right.
You go into any teacher's classroom, they will tell you who they would be concerned about.
Right.
Teachers already possess the knowledge.
Right.
We're not using it.
Right.
But they have it.
Right. So we need to create a system.
That's right.
Through in-service training, through lots of things, so that the teachers can recognize concerning behavior, you know, make sure they kind of formalize it.
Mm-hmm.
What is concerning behavior? What is not concerning behavior? And then what to do when you have a concern about a student?
You know, because they'll tell you this child has no empathy,
right?
No feelings for anybody. He looks like he's dead inside. You know, teachers recognize this stuff because they see thousands of kids, and they can spot those that are different.
Right. Okay?
Let's begin to use that knowledge.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This once they have that information, the next layer is the what I would just call the meso layer, which is the second layer, which is the school building.
Right, the building itself.
The building itself. Mm-hmm. And it blows my mind that we have, that many schools, school systems, have employed people called school counselors and school psychologists.
Right.
And school social workers.
Mm-hmm.
None of which do those jobs as counselors or psychologists. They do testing, they do assessments, they do some administrative stuff. But we've worked in schools before. The amount of counseling that we're afforded to do is very small.
Minuscule.
Very small. Schools should have, especially high schools and middle schools, schools should have a person on campus that is there for the mental health of the students. Mm-hmm. That does, you know, when teachers have a concern about somebody, this is the person you go to.
Right.
And that person's sole responsibility is the mental health and emotional development of the student body.
That's right. We just talked about the classroom. Mm-hmm. Okay. The teachers know who these students are. The problem is teachers can't do anything about it.
You know,
they will tell the administration, but there is no system in place to do anything about this student.
Right.
So if you have a teacher who says there's something very different about this mm-hmm. kid, they should be able to go to the school level mm-hmm. and say, I'm worried about this kid.
Right.
This is what I'm seeing, which should trigger a response at the building, at the school level, to say, okay, counselor, psychologist, social worker, let's keep an eye on this kid. Let's find out where he lives. You know, let's learn everything there is to know about him, because all of us are seeing that there's something very different about this child.
Right.
It's not that they've threatened somebody. It's not that they've done it. There just is something different about this child. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do anything beyond that, but you have to start working with these kids. Right. That's that 1 or 2 or 5% that we're talking about.
Right. And the, you know, right now they would say, well, we should tell the school psychologist. Well, the school psychologist, you know, the reality is in most districts, the school psychologist is itinerant. And so that means that they're covering multiple schools, which means that they may be at, and especially at a high school, they're only going to be at the high school maybe once a week, if that, maybe once every other week or so.
Right.
And it's just about as that regular at a middle school.
Right.
Their primary focus is elementary school because that's when they identify learning disabilities and all that kind of stuff. And so the primary focus is then. But when we're talking about mental health needs, we really have to be focusing at the middle and high school levels.
We're talking about middle and high school students, right? We don't have to worry about the elementary school
not
students.
As much,
they're not producing. That's not where this is happening.
Right.
Okay. We have to protect those kids.
Right.
But we don't have to do prevention at the elementary level.
Right. And school counselors and school social workers are itinerant, just like school psychologists. Mm-hmm. And school counselors, you know, they have so many administrative responsibilities.
That's right.
You know, at the high school level, they're spending most of their time working with students as far as, you know, getting them ready for college and trying to get their schedules organized and all that kind of stuff, that they don't have the opportunity to do much counseling.
Exactly.
So we need to have, at a building level, a person there that's sole responsibility is and mental health.
That's right. And train that person in risk assessment.
Right.
Okay, we know how to do that. We do it here in the office. Train that person in risk assessment and have them available. That's their primary responsibility. So if the schools across the county suddenly said, we have this kid we're concerned about, the next day you can go there and start working with that
kid.
Okay, so you have to have people who are educated, trained, in risk assessment, and who are available.
Right
now, we don't make any accommodation for that.
So if we think about, you know, some of the circumstances that we've even had here in our county over the past couple of weeks, we've had students suspended and expelled from schools just making stupid statements. They're saying something stupid, and because of the concern, because of the heightened concern about everything, they're being suspended and expelled. Instead of suspending and expelling them, they could see this mental health person there in the school. A risk assessment can be done to determine if the person really is at risk for doing something, and then a plan can be put into place to help resolve those issues.
We have several cases. Some have to remain confidential, but there was one in the paper yesterday, so I think it's okay to talk about it. A boy, high school, I think he's a high school senior, was expelled. Not just expelled. Now he has a felony.
Right.
Okay, so because it doesn't matter whether you say or text. Okay?
Right.
So he happened to text it, Snapchat it or something, that he wanted to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm.
He was reacting to being bullied.
Right.
Okay. So here's a kid who's had been subjected to bullying, name calling, and in a fit of frustration, this teenager says, "I'd like to kill them. I'm going to kill them." This is not the only teenager in history who has said, "I'm going to kill somebody."
Right.
In fact, our president said that he could kill in the middle of Times Square and get away with it.
Right.
Okay. No, he didn't get a felony, didn't get arrested.
Right.
Okay. People talk like that.
Okay? Right. Some people talk like that sometimes.
Right. We have all said, "I'd like to kill the you know, it's not that unusual.
Right.
I mean, people say these things, especially kids.
Not that it's right.
Right.
But they do say it.
Or they say, "I'd like to kill myself."
Right.
Everybody has said that.
Right.
I think. I mean, most of us, "I'd like to kill myself." That doesn't mean you mean it.
Right.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that you're suicidal. It doesn't mean that...
You don't get Baker-acted.
Right.
You don't get... Okay. So, but we've said... But now these words have such meaning. Okay.
Right.
So at the prevention level, as soon as those words are uttered or texted or tweeted or mm-hmm. Snapchatted or Instagrammed, these professionals can go in and say, was this stupidity or is this a danger?
Right.
And we have to have that system in place.
Right.
Okay. We have to devote time, energy, money to have a system in place, because now this kid has a felony.
Right.
Okay. Now
right.
He's unemployable. He won't have a high school education, so he can't get a job.
Right.
Because he doesn't have a high school degree. He has a felony, so he can't get hired anywhere.
Right.
For making a stupid comment.
Right.
Do we really want to do that to our citizens?
Right.
You know, to our children.
Right. No, absolutely. And it puts, what happens is, because of the way the system is right now, something stupid like that is said.
Right.
And we go immediately to our reaction.
Right.
And our only response right now is suspension or expulsion.
That's right.
That's our
and,
only
and
response.
And to criminalize
right.
what is just stupid behavior.
Right.
It's not stupid. It's impulsive.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have to have somebody at the building level
right.
there to address those issues, to see if there's really a threat,
mm-hmm.
and then to begin a process of dealing with
right.
that that potential threat. And you know, a risk assessment assesses, you know, static, dynamic, and protective factors.
Mm-hmm.
You have to address all three.
Right.
You know, so your static factors are those things that are
mm-hmm.
stable. Those are historic things usually. Dynamic things are, you know, does the person have
mm-hmm.
access to weapons? Does the person have, you know,
mm-hmm.
current substance abuse issues and those
right.
kinds of things? Then, of course, nice protective factors.
Right.
Which can be the person there at the campus that's helping to
you know,
deal with these issues.
I think of the kid who's a little bit odd or a little bit not athletic, odd looking or odd behaving, who gets bullied and bullied and bullied year after
mm-hmm.
year after. We know that happens, okay? So they get bullied year after year after year after year. And so finally the child has had enough and said, I'd like to kill all of you. Well, the first thing that should happen is this assessment, and you go into the child's home and you discover under his bedroom that he has a case full of high-powered assault
right.
rifle. Okay, that's one thing.
Right.
You go into another kid's home and no, we don't have guns. He doesn't have access to guns. He's been crying about being bullied all this time. Those are two very, very different situations.
Right.
And we need to deal
currently,
with each
we treat
one.
Them the same.
We treat them the same. They're
right.
both felons. They're both going to jail. They're both going to be expelled
right.
from school. We need to be a little more judicious.
Right.
We have the knowledge. We're just not using it.
Right. Right. And the third level,
right.
so we have the classroom level, the school building level,
right.
and the third level is associated with what we're just talking about, and that's the district or the state or even the federal level.
That's right.
Where we have to have other things in place
right.
for these. When you've said this before, and it's so difficult because there's a couple of words in the statement that you want to figure out how to put some emphasis on.
Mm-hmm.
When you expel someone, what are you expelling them to?
That's right.
Where
right.
are they going?
Right.
And the problem is that they're not going anywhere.
When Nicholas Cruz was expelled,
right.
where did he go?
Right.
He didn't have a home.
Right.
Because his mother had died and
mm-hmm.
he was out of the foster care system.
Right.
Because he was 18.
Right.
So where was he expelled to?
Right. And at 16, 17, 18, you're expelled. So you don't have a high school, you said this a moment ago, you don't have a high school diploma, you don't have a place to go, so you don't have any training, so you can't go in the military, you can't go,
right.
you know, you're going to have a really difficult time getting a job.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do? You don't have any training with
now,
any skills.
But if a person is truly a danger,
right?
Maybe you do want this to happen. I mean, I don't think you want that person to languish on the streets.
Right.
Because they're still going to be a danger.
Right.
To somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But do we really want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
What you just, that litany of
mm-hmm.
disadvantages, do we really want to do that to kids who are making impulsive,
right.
childish, teenage statements?
But we won't know that until we have that second layer where
right.
we do the risk assessment and everything.
Right.
So you do the risk assessment, you figure out if the person is really
mm-hmm.
a risk or not. at that level, then you can implement some of these third layer strategies or plans. For example, when we think about, someone like Nicholas Cruz or someone, we keep mentioning him specifically, but there's lots of examples of students for this who aren't going to go to college. They're just not going to pursue that higher education. Why don't we have in place a system for them to get vocational training? I mentioned this to somebody the other day, and they said, well, there are vocational schools through the public school systems. Mm-hmm. Here in our county, we have two. The problem is that, first off, for you to say, I go to this vocational school,
There's a stigma attached to it.
Because the expectation...
You can't do anything else, so you have to go there.
Right. Because the expectation that we have right now is that you're going to go to college.
Right.
No. That should not be our expectation for everyone. Everyone is not going to go to college. Feel that. It's true.
A year or two ago, we had something passed called ESSA, the Every Student Succeeds Act, which replaced earlier.
Right.
That means in career or college.
Right.
But if you're in high school today, you're taking a college preparatory curriculum,
right,
at least for the first 2 years.
Right.
I don't know what happens after that.
Right.
But the first 2 years, you're taking Algebra 1 and you're going to take a foreign language.
Right.
And you're going to pass them or you're not going to get a degree.
Right. If a student has an IEP, an individual education plan, meaning that they have a learning disability or they're other health impaired or they have some disability under the category of or under the act of the Individuals with Disability Education Act. Right. At the age of 14, the school determines whether that student is on a standard diploma track or a special diploma track. That's decided at 14.
Right.
If a student wants to go to a vocational school, they can't do that until they're 16, 17 sometimes.
That's right, to your junior.
And so until they're about a junior in high school.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that means that they've already had to endure, I'm going to use that word, 2 years of high school, which oftentimes means 2 years of
college
failure.
Doing college prep work.
Right.
Foreign language.
For which they know they're not going to go to college.
Right.
They
have
no interest in going to college. Mm-hmm. Why can't we, using this example, why can't it be that a high school freshman can say, you know what, I'm not going to go to college.
Right.
I'd like to learn how to, I'd like to become an auto mechanic. I'd love to work on cars. That's all I ever wanted to do was work on cars. Why can't that person go to a vocational school, get their basic education that they need, that they need for a high school diploma, but also be getting training of what they're going to do.
Right.
I had a guy that I know in my family who wanted to be a welder. That's all he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And he's failing in school. He's struggling in school. And, as soon as he was able to get to the vocational school, it's like everything turned around for him. Why can't we do that earlier? It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. No, again, we can.
Yeah.
We just don't have the will to do it.
Right.
I mean, we know what needs to be done.
That's a simple change.
But when we talk about devoting resources, again, I want to go back to that. How much is it going to cost to arm and train teachers? If we have money for that, surely we have money. Don't we have money? Please, governors, legislators, don't we have money to do all the other things that need to be done? Even if you agree that we have to harden schools and arm everybody.
Right.
Don't we have resources to do all the other things that we know have to be done? We have something called a code of conduct in school districts at state and district levels. And the code of conduct is, if you commit these violations, these are the automatic punishments.
Right.
Let's not think about it. Let's not apply any knowledge or let's just punish for breaking these rules, okay? The codes of conduct have got to be rewritten to reflect what's really going on in schools today. The codes of conduct don't protect kids from bullies, and they don't do anything to help us identify who the potential risks are.
Right.
It's time to redo these things.
Right, yeah. So, and that's that third layer.
That
district state and federal level. We have to have some of these other things in place. You know, the things that we were talking about, you know, with the vocational, that's from an educational perspective. A lot of kids act out behaviorally because they can't cope educationally.
Right.
So if we address the issue that way,
right,
we may decrease problems. If we have that second layer of mental health services in the schools, we're going to prevent issues because we're going to be addressing problems at the earliest possible stage.
Right. That's right.
Now, will this plan prevent all violence in schools? Of course not. But nothing is going to prevent all violence in schools.
If a child wants to shoot somebody, if a teenager wants to shoot somebody, there are ways to get guns in schools.
If anybody wants to.
That's right. And you can't, I mean, sadly, you can't prevent it.
I mean, we've had laws and things in place here in the country since the country started.
But you know, if we address these groups, I talked about the kids who are mentally ill, students who are mentally ill, who, because of their mental illness, are impaired.
Right.
And schools aren't dealing with them because they're not trained to deal with them. Okay, they're not physicians. They're not professional psychologists. So we have this large group of students who have the various types of mental illness who are underserved by our culture.
Right.
And we have all the kids who are underserved educationally.
Right.
What you were talking about is you have all these students who don't plan to go to college, who should be trained to do the things that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It can still be a rigorous training program.
Sure.
I mean, my son went through the firefighter and paramedic training. That's not easy.
Right.
I mean, it's not like it's an easy way out.
Right.
They still have to read and do math and calculate formulas. So these other jobs are not an easy way out.
Right.
And we can make them rigorous enough.
Well, and I mean, I guess what I would say is, who cares if it's an easy way out? You know, if you want to be a plumber.
Right.
Why not be a plumber?
Right.
You know, if you want, because the world needs plumbers.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be an electrician, why not be an electrician?
Right. And other people have said, well, that's discrimination. You know, you're saying, well, these kids can go to college, but these kids can't. It's not discrimination. That's choice.
And I'm sorry, but it's reality.
And not all kids are going to go. In fact, right now, only 40% go and succeed.
Right.
About 40%,
right.
I think. That might be
the loose
overestimate.
Statistics that we can...
You know, it might even be fewer than that.
Right.
But when I was, when you and I went to college, it was about 20%
right.
who went to college.
Right. So right now, with it as wide open as you want it to be, with the expectation that everybody can and should go to college, still only 40% are going and graduating.
That's right. And still, everybody, you know, when we talk about educational opportunity, we're talking about opportunity. Everybody has the opportunity to go to college. Everybody may not choose to go to college.
Right.
One way or another, they may not choose to go to college.
And the difference, I think, that's important with what we're talking about compared to what other countries do, is we're not talking about giving eighth graders a test.
That's right.
And determining based upon the test results whether that person is going to be on a college track or on a vocational track. I'm not talking about that.
Right.
This is an option. This is what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And I get the argument that, well, you know what, at 14 they might not know for sure. We live in a world today, and I think this is something that a lot of adults have to recognize. We live in a world today where if you're 27 years old and you say, you know what, I've been working for 10 years as a plumber and I'd like to do more.
Right.
You can go back to school.
You can go back. There are plenty of options.
Admittedly, in the 80s and 90s even, that wasn't the case.
Always possible.
The plan was, and the reality, the statistics showed at that time that if you didn't go to college right after high school, then you probably weren't very likely to go to college.
Even if you took a break in your car, you know, you left for a year.
Right.
Chances of you finishing went way down.
Right. It's not true anymore.
No. There are too many ways.
More and more people are going back to school later. Yeah. We have online schools. We have...
The community colleges became state colleges, which offer a very different kind of option that didn't exist 10 years ago.
Right.
We have online courses.
Right.
We have MOOCs, you know, courses that you don't have to take for credit, but you can take for experience. You can do work experience counts for college credit. There are numerous ways now to change and... to change your mind in your 20s or 30s.
Yeah. I mean, when I was finishing up my graduate program, there was a guy that graduated at the same time, and he was in his 60s, right. And he was getting his PhD.
Right, right.
I mean, so it's...
I should do that.
It's another one. But it's... The reality is that there's... It's not... No longer is it that what you're doing at 18 is what you're set to do the rest of
your
life.
That's right. 14 or 18 or 25.
Right. You know? It's not like that anymore.
Right.
And so allowing a 14-year-old... And I get that he's 14, but allowing a 14-year-old to make some of these decisions, giving him some him or her some agency about his life, some decision-making authority as far as what his future is, giving him that opportunity, even if it's at risk for undershooting what you sort of anticipate for him for the rest of his life, it's going to be okay.
I'm smiling because how many 14-year-olds do you have currently in your practice who have made the decision because they've stopped doing homework?
Right.
They've stopped studying.
Right.
That's
and it makes their parents crazy.
Right. But they're making the decision not to.
Right.
So this whole thing about, well, we can't let them make that decision, they're making it anyway.
Right.
I have plenty of students in middle school and early high school who have said, I'm just not going to do this anymore.
Right.
They've already made the decision.
Right.
The problem today is they have no other option.
Right.
We're not giving them an alternative.
Right.
They're making the decision
right.
with no alternative.
Right.
What we're saying is let them make the choice, but give them an alternative.
Right. Yeah. And that's that third layer. We have to offer more options.
That's right.
Because right now we're not. We're just not.
Right.
So if we, you know, we instruct teachers, we provide training for teachers to identify students mm-hmm. at risk. And then we have services at the schools
right.
to provide the mental health and emotional health and behavioral health support that the right. students need. And then have alternative programs for these students mm-hmm. to actually use that's going to give them a
right.
future.
Right.
I think that would...
Again, all we're saying is take all that money. If you want to harden schools and you want to spend money on training and arming teachers, okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But let's use equal resources
right.
to do all the other interventions that we know
right.
will be effective.
Right. I think that the bottom line to me is that what we're talking about, this plan, is a... We always talk about our little slogan
mm-hmm.
is teach, don't punish. This approach teaches. This approach provides support, education, and information to service providers, to the students, to the families, to the community. Many of the other strategies that have been proposed, whether it's mm-hmm. arming teachers or whoever, is a punishment model. It doesn't teach anything. And we have to teach. If we want people to learn, we have to teach them.
Right.
We can't assume that they're going to... We can't assume that knowing that there's the possibility of a person on campus that has a gun is going to deter them from going to shoot at the school. We can't assume that.
And, you know, you and I are... not just critics.
Mm-hmm.
We try not to be critics.
Try not
right?
to.
I mean, it's easy to be a critic, you know.
Yeah.
But as somebody said one time, there's never been a monument erected to a critic.
Right.
We're not just critics.
Mm-hmm.
And we both believe in put your money where your mouth is.
Right.
And I would say to governors, presidents, legislators, local leaders, go ahead and use us.
Yeah.
I won't ask for any money, but I'm saying take a tiny fraction of what you're spending to harden targets.
Mm-hmm.
We will train people how to do this.
Right.
We have the knowledge. We have the
right.
expertise.
Not
Come
just
on
us.
In.
Any.
Right. And
know,
we can put together a training program. It could be at the county level, state level, federal level.
Yeah.
That will help. It will teach professionals how to identify who these
right.
At-risk students might be, and come up with workable, practical, inexpensive ways mm-hmm. of accomplishing all the things we want to accomplish to end these things. We have the knowledge. We're simply not using the information we have.
Right.
Okay. So it's not a costly multi-million-dollar program that we're advocating.
Right.
The pieces are already in place. They just have to be put together.
Right.
We would be happy to do it. We will put our money where our mouth is.
Right.
We will be happy to do this.
Right.
All you have to do is call.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Yeah. It's not
something that has to be created from scratch.
Right.
We already have the knowledge.
Right.
Let's start using it.
Right.
Okay. Is it not a? It's a fair. Call us.
Yes. All right. So that is it for today. Yeah. Next week we're going to shift topics next week, and we're going to talk about some different things next week. But we're going to visit this periodically.
Well, we are, because we are now being asked to do risk assessment.
Right.
In fact, we are doing risk assessments in our office. So it is a topic that we're going to continue to follow.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to continue to follow it in the news because there is some action here on this whole gun issue.
Yeah, and we're trying to be involved in the decision making as it mm-hmm. relates to even
right.
arming teachers. You know, it's a strategy that we have a lot of concerns about, but like so many of the other things that we mm-hmm. talk about, you know, we're not going to bury our heads in the sand.
No.
You know, the governor signed a bill and put it into place that this
right.
is going to be, this is going to happen. We can be critics. We can argue against it, and we can do all
right.
that kind of stuff. But it isn't going to change it if it's going to, you know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
And
so,
we've said multiple times, go ahead and do that. I mean, we're not saying don't. I'm saying if that's the decision
right.
you make, that's fine. But there are these other pieces that
right.
we should put into place.
Exactly.
That's all we're saying. We're not saying don't. We're saying, but let's do these other things that
right.
will also aid in solving this horrible problem.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, all right. Love to hear from you, hear your thoughts and ideas as well. So, but that's it for today.
That's it.
Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.